Let me pull this out and try it this way. I do have one correction to that introduction. I was employed with Five Rivers when I accepted the invitation to be here, and I kind of fulfilled a lifelong dream of mine in the last couple of months and left the corporate world to start my own business. So that's what I'm doing now, and it's been a lot of fun. I really appreciate the point that Dane made that you get to. And as I present some information to you today and kind of share some thoughts with you, I think a lot of it falls in that category that we get to in this industry. We've got a lot of exciting things going on in this industry right now. We've got some challenges ahead of us. There's no question about that. But we get to take this industry to the next level, and that's really what I want to talk to you about. I'm supposed to talk in 30 minutes here and get through this. I'm going to have to talk like Lois Pringle to get that done. Lois Pringle is a lady that I work with at JBS. She's the fastest talker that I've ever seen, and she's very smart. And I would sometimes say to her, Lois, slow down. I cannot listen or hear as fast as you can talk. My ears just don't work that fast. So I'll try not to be Lois. So if I am, then you'll have to holler at me and I'll slow down. I want to offer you the perspective from a little further down the supply chain. Most everybody in the room, of course, is a rancher. You're on the cow-calf side of the business. Maybe you're involved in the stocker side of the business, and there would probably be a few of you that would raise your hand and say, I've fed some of my own cattle. Who would do that this afternoon? So we've got, you know, a decent percentage. Maybe that's 10%, maybe a little less. I want to offer you the perspective from further down the supply chain, and the title of this talk, as you can see, is A Cattle Feeder's Perspective on How Ranchers Can Produce Cattle That Work in All Industry Segments, and of course, that would include your own. What I can paraphrase that or restate that in shorter terms as creating value for you at the ranch level while also creating value for me as a cattle feeder and also for the packer. That's really what we're interested in. We're interested in cattle that make money for all of us. I want to share a little perspective on that from a gentleman that he's been gone a few years now. His name, some of you may even know him if you had some association with NCBA back 15 years ago or so. A gentleman by the name of Roger Berglund. Roger was one of my mentors when I was working at Cattle Facts. He was one of those guys that you're just privileged in life to know and to be around. Roger was enthusiastic. He had worked as a news person and as a writer at Feedstuffs for many years, and then kind of toward the end of his career, he went to NCBA, and he was in their PR, and he did writing, and he taught me how to write, and he taught me a lot more than that. He became a really good friend. Roger had a great saying that I never forgot. He said, the essence of PR, or public relations, the essence of PR is to do something good, then tell people about it. That made sense to me. It would be the opposite of what we're seeing happen in our nation right now with the Affordable Care Act. They've got to do something good before they try to tell people that it is good. But Roger understood PR, and so I've taken Roger's statement and I've retooled that just a little bit. Same thought, though. The essence of successful cattle production is to create a highly valuable calf crop and then go tell people about it, then market your calf crop. So you can see the order there. Create value and then go capture it. Create value first and then go capture it. If you think about what you're doing in this business in those terms, that's going to take you a long way. I think Roger Berglund really had it right. Now, what I see in the cattle feeding world, and having worked 13 years for Five Rivers, feed yards in the north, feed yards in the south, I've seen a lot of cattle. I feel like I've pretty much seen the industry's bell curve when it comes to cattle. And I can tell you for sure, they're probably not from the state of South Dakota, but there's still way too many average cattle out there. There's still way too many cattle that look like the cattle you see here. Maybe they're not the worst cattle, but how much value are they really creating? And you can't see everything by looking, but I think all of us can look at this pen of cattle. Yeah, they're a put-together pen of cattle, but how much value is really there? And it may be even more than that, how much opportunity is lost because more value could have been created if we'd have just done a few things different. Here's another group, okay? How would you like to put these cattle on the grid? Any volunteers there? Would you like to do that? Now, contrast that with a set like this. All right, there's some value there. There's some thought behind those cattle, or maybe these cattle. How about those cattle? Would you like to feed a set like that? Or maybe some like that. Would you like to have a pen full of cattle that look like that? Now, those cattle, and again, we can't tell everything by looking, and I'm not suggesting that we can, but I can pretty well tell you that those cattle have a real chance to create value for everybody in the system, from the beginning of the supply chain to the end. And the main reason probably is because there was some thought and planning that were put together in the way those cattle were designed genetically and the way they were managed. So there's a lot of opportunity to create value in this industry if we just do that and do it well. Now, I always tell people when I talk to a cow-calf audience, which is fairly often, I say, you know, my job as a cattle feeder is a lot easier than yours, and I'm really a lot easier to get along with than you are. Okay, if I ask you in the room, what traits do you care about in your cow herd, you're going to have a list that's probably at least 10 traits long. You can talk about calving ease and fleshing ability and milking ability and udder quality and growth and so on and so on, and you'll end up with a list that's probably more than 10 traits long. But the cattle feeding part of the business is really pretty simple. It boils down to these four things that I've listed here. If you get these four things right with your calf crop, what they will do as they go on through the supply chain, you've created a lot of value for somebody on down the chain, and they're likely to recognize that pretty quickly and be back to buy your calves every year. And, of course, that boils down to health. Minimal sickness, that's number one. Especially at the value of today's calf prices, we can't lose many cattle or we're in big trouble. High average daily gain and low feed to gain. The cattle have to have performance in them. They have to have performance. Feed costs are coming down a little bit, but they're still pretty high, and it matters a lot if they grow fast and grow efficiently. Then they have to finish at a desirable finish weight. They can't just have a growth curve that goes on forever. That doesn't work either, but they do have to get fairly large and have a desirable finish weight. Then finally, a high quality grade. Marbling is what drives our grids. That's not to say that yield grade and some other things are not important, but if you really look at what drives value in these grids today, it is marbling. It is quality grade more than anything else. So if you get those four big ones right, again, you've done a lot of things to create value for those further down the supply chain. And again, that's value that's going to be recognized. These numbers are going to be hard to see, but I've got a little summary of cattle that grow and grade versus those that didn't grow so well and didn't grade so well. I'm not going to take the time to go through all of that, but there is a tremendous amount of value difference in doing a simple comparison between average or maybe a little below average growing cattle and a little below average grading cattle with those that did those two things well. And this data set happens to come from about 100,000 or so head closed out, all yearling steers, all fed in the same yards, fed the same time of year. Bottom line, there was $80 a head difference in their final P&L or their final value just because one group grew faster and graded better. Now, $80 a head is all the money in the world to a cattle feeder. That's way more than our margin, and so cattle that will do those kind of things, that will gain 4 pounds a day and convert better and so forth, I mean, those cattle are going to generate a lot more dollars. So cattle that grow and grade are winners, and that's something if you maybe take one thing away from this talk, that would be one thing to remember. Cattle that grow and then grade are going to win in a feed yard setting, and of course they're going to do something well for the packer too. Now, here's a kill sheet that you can't see the small numbers on it. So I've highlighted the main bottom line. I mean, it always, to us, feeding cattle, it doesn't always matter exactly how you create value, but it matters a lot more that you do create value with a given set of cattle, okay? The kind of startling thing about this kill sheet is probably not that these cattle made a $98 per head premium over the average market. Now, that's impressive, but what's kind of amazing is you're probably not that surprised to hear that because it's becoming more common in our industry to see what we used to only dream about in terms of making money on the grid and beating the average market. Cattle that make a $98 premium are awfully good cattle. They created a lot of value, but it's, as I said, it's becoming a lot more common, and we know how to do it. It's not a fluke. And in fact, if you look at some USPB data here, going back to kind of when they started that organization in the late 90s, I guess they started in the mid-90s, you can see what the average grid premium of the top quartile of cattle that are coming through USPB, that's what those numbers are. From $26 a head back in the late 90s, and I remember those years, and I remember thinking when cattle made a $25 or $30 premium on the grid, that was the best thing we'd ever heard of. That was just fantastic. And now look at where the top quartile of cattle are. Well over $100 a head. And I know people, and maybe you do too, that are disappointed if their cattle don't make a $100 premium on the grid. It's not everybody, but it's people that have genetically designed their cattle to succeed and manage their cattle accordingly. So really the answer to the topic today is pretty simple. Balance the necessary traits at the ranch level with those at the rest of the supply chain, at the feeding and packing level. And I say there with growth and grade, above average growth potential and above average carcass potential, even better would be to be what? Way above average. Way above average. That's what it comes down to. And if we lean, and I realize this, and I think you realize this, if we lean one way or the other too far, we're probably going to be less profitable. We're probably going to be less profitable. If you lean too far toward a low-input cow that has no growth and you don't care about carcass, once people recognize what your calves are, they'll pay you accordingly, and it's going to be a discount. On the other hand, if you lean too far toward more quote-unquote terminal cattle, that's not going to be working exactly well either. So the answer is a balance. We know that. But the cool thing in that is with today's genetics, we're getting closer and closer, I think, to cattle that will just flat do it all. I want to talk for the rest of this discussion this afternoon on kind of looking forward and saying, what are four game changers that will impact the next 5 years? This is just my opinion, so you can take it for what it's worth. But I believe that we can look at the next 5 years in our industry, and we can see some things that will be different, that will change this industry, in many cases for the better, but in some cases may be challenging for us. So I want to highlight four things. Number one, we're going to see and are on the front edge of seeing a period of unusually high cow-calf profitability. That started, but I think it's going to stay strong if we can keep the corn market down and we can keep the economy halfway strong. We're going to see some very strong profitability in the cow-calf business. Number two, we are faced with shrinking infrastructure when it comes to feeding and packing. There's no way around that. We have too much capacity and not enough cattle. That's going to happen. Also, and this you may find is an unusual one on my list, but I believe that we are seeing and really getting to a new threshold in terms of the success that we're having, can be had out there with timed AI programs, fixed-timed AI programs. That can be a game-changer for those who will. And finally, the impact of these high-end genetics. So I want to talk about all of those things individually, not exactly in that order. I want to start with one of the biggest challenges we probably face and something that we're going to see impact our business in 2014. And that is we have too much capacity. We have excess feeding capacity because the cow herd has shrunk. And if you do the math, there's people that do the math different ways. And I wasn't here to hear Jim Robb talk the other day, but he may have said it too. But most people would say today that we have somewhere between 20 and 25% excess feeding capacity. You look back in the early part of the last decade, it was pretty well in balance, feeding capacity to the size of the inventory. And then by the middle of the last decade, or toward the end, I guess, we saw 20% excess capacity, and that's inched up even further from there. So there's a lot of pressure on the cattle feeding business. I will tell you, for those of you in the Northern Plains, which would include most people in the room, the hardest hit area cattle feeding wise is probably going to be Texas. So you're maybe a little bit insulated from that, but it is going to impact the whole industry to some degree. And then here's the same type of a graph looking at packing capacity versus the size of a calf crop. And the blue line being packing capacity, you see it's more just flat, chopping along there, but fairly stable. And, of course, the size of our calf crop has just been decreasing and decreasing. More separation there. So the packing industry is under a lot of pressure. I think in 2014, I was talking to one of the major packers or a gentleman from one of the major packers just the other day, and we were kind of comparing notes on this, and we kind of agreed that the cow plants are probably the most vulnerable, but it doesn't mean that the fed plants are not going to be impacted as well. So that's going to impact the market. And when you see things happen and when you hear about plant closures, don't be surprised to see the futures market react to that, just like we did last year when the Plainview, Texas plant went down. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. Now, what about these good times in the cow-calf business? There's a number of things we can say, and I believe personally that we're going to see profitability above cow-calf costs that may be as much as $250 to $500 a head. Now, that's above cash costs. It's not above your full accounting costs, but here's my perspective on that. I have a small cow herd, and if I can do that, you can do that, and I think that's the kind of money I'm going to make in the next few years. So what do we do with this period of better profitability? I think it's real important what we do with it for the future of your operation and for the future of the industry. And so I have just a few thoughts for you, a few suggestions. Use those extra dollars to do something that really builds your operation for the long term or helps it transition to the next generation. And those would be things like debt reduction, for sure, better genetics, maybe investing in some new technology that will help you move forward. Certainly handling facilities, that's very important. And maybe you'll have a chance to upgrade those. And then also the last thing would be we need to think about this in our business, and that is help a younger person get started in the cow side of the business and help them build equity during these good years. That's real important to the longevity of this business. And so I really would challenge everybody in the room to think about how you can help a young person grow and become strong in the cow business. It may be somebody within your own family, or you may have to reach outside of your family to do that, but it's real important to the future of the business. This huge success with timed AI, I just want to highlight some studies that were done at the University of Missouri. If you're not aware of this, I mean, to me, these numbers, again, I don't own that many cows, but these are shocking kind of numbers. There were 73 herds representing over 7,300 cattle or 7,000 cattle. This was done over a couple years where they did the COSYNC program, COSYNC and CEDAR program, and fixed time AI, and they had a result 62% first service conception rate on those cattle. And these are lactating beef cows now, not heifers. Out of those 73 herds, only seven of them, less than 10%, fell below 50% first service conception. That's a game changer, folks, for those who will. And I label it like that because I know not everybody in the audience says, well, you know, AI is too much work or this or that. But with the genetics we have available and with the technology to get a cow pregnant like you're seeing there, and I put Dave Patterson's name and phone number up there, that can be an absolute game changer for you individually. If you're not already employing that technology, it can also be a game changer for the industry in the whole in terms of rapid genetic progress. So it definitely makes my list. And finally, a little focus on genetics, and I've got a little more detail that I want to show you on this, and that is we're seeing something happen now because of years of genetic selection. It really shows up in the feed yard and in the packing plant, and like I showed you, the USPB grid premiums, we're seeing the best end of these genetics really separate themselves from the rest of the bell curve. We used to make lots of comparisons of the top 10% of the cattle versus the bottom 10% and all that kind of thing, kind of fun to look at. Now we're saying what's the top end versus average, and that distance just keeps getting wider and wider. And so I use a quote from my friend Judd Butler, who manages the Gilcrest Yard right close to Greeley. He said, these new cattle, these really strong genetic performance cattle, are breaking all the old paradigms, so to speak. What they're doing is making obsolete all the way we used to project cattle. He tells me that the days on feed projections that he used to use for cattle coming in weighing 7 or 8 or whatever they were coming into the yard, Those numbers don't work anymore because the cattle get to the target weights 30 days quicker. And so we're having to rethink and change our management schemes for cattle like that because they literally are clear off the bell curve. Here's just a little bit of data to follow up on that. This happens to be Five Rivers data. A new era in cattle performance is here. I asked the feed yard managers at Five Rivers back early this year. I said, we know what our average performance is, and you can, if you can see it there, it's about a three and a half pound per day gain on a steer, a yearling steer, kind of an average steer north to south. Around a 6.0 dry feed conversion on a 12-month average, that'd be pretty close. And then maybe making $20 or $25 a head on the grid. That's probably pretty typical industry-type performance. So then I asked those managers, I said, you guys tell me, I'm not going to dig it out of the database, I want to know what's in your minds relative to what are the best-performing cattle you feed, the top 10, 15%. There's their answers on the second line. They came back and they told me, basically, almost 5x5 cattle. We're getting close to 5x5 cattle. Maybe not quite there yet, but getting pretty close with the high 4-pound gain and a low 5 conversion on a dry basis. And then also the same cattle giving us $70 to $100 grid premiums. Those were the numbers that they came back with. It wasn't what I said or wasn't anything other than what the opinions of the managers and guys that watch a lot of cattle through the system. That's what they were seeing, what the best end of the cattle would do. And what's amazing about that, if you do the math, again, comparing those top-end cattle to average, it's over $200 a head. It's a dramatic, dramatic departure from the high-end to just average cattle. That, folks, is a game-changer. And people that have those cattle and people that produce those cattle are going to be less and less satisfied to sell cattle at close to an average price because their cattle are worth dramatically more. And that's why what I see coming is more programs this industry is going to rise up and create around the best genetics that there are out there. And that would include, I'm sure, many of the cattle that you guys produce in this room. And what that's going to look like in rough terms is something like this. You're going to have more specifications that your cattle may meet, and if they meet that, they'll be paid. They'll be paid for in a better way. You'll get a premium price for them. I think we literally are going to see, everybody pretty well is familiar with grids at the fed cattle level. Okay, most of you have a pretty good idea that is a value for value system. In other words, value is paid for value created at the fed cattle level. That's an interface between the cattle feeder and the packer where their cattle are paid for what they're worth. I think we're literally going to see that grid start to shift back to the feeder cattle level. It's going to be different in terms of the way it works, but the concepts will be exactly the same. And if you have those good cattle, you're going to like that a lot because they're going to bring more. So premium prices are going to be paid for those cattle with known genetics and really the management behind them to create a lot of value. Now, I want to end my last few minutes here talking about a project that really is an illustration of how fast genetic value can be created with the technology that we have today. This is a project that is underway right now between Gardner Angus Ranch in Kansas and Zoetis. It's called the Technology Two-Step Project. The question that was asked going into any research project, you always have a question. The question in this case was how much genetic progress can be made in one generation combining two proven technologies. In this case, it was DNA testing plus one round of AI to high-value Angus sires. And the goal of this project was to increase marbling and grid premium potential. So that was what the project was. Here's quickly the research method. So you start out with 104 heifers. They were sourced off of one Texas ranch. They were just kind of generic heifers. I'll show you a picture of them in just a minute. This started in April 2012, and these cattle were not necessarily selected because they had high carcass potential. It was pretty well known that this ranch had not been selecting for carcass traits. All those heifers were then DNA tested by Zoetis. They used the best technology that they had on a crossbred set of heifers. So it wasn't the GeneMax test, but it was one that works on crossbred animals. The bottom third of the heifers were then culled based on their low marbling scores. I'll show you that. And then the remaining top two-thirds of the heifers were bred to high growth and carcass Angus sires. And the resulting calves just actually went on feed last week. So here's a picture of the heifers. If you can see that, there's there's some Charolais influence in them, but they're a crossbred set of heifers. There's maybe a touch of ear. There's some other breeds in there, mixed, just a mixed set of heifers. That's what they were. Now, these heifers did, as we expected, they did have a weakness, and this is the MVP score from Zoetis. Some of you would have some familiarity for it. This is the DNA score for marbling, and they were below average. In fact, on the MVP, they were a minus 21. So zero is basically average there, and they were, the group as a whole, all 100-plus head, they were negative for marbling potential, just as we'd expected. On the other hand, things started to change when you culled off the worst offenders. And the what you see here is that first bar is the all-heifer bar, minus 21. The culls were over minus 50, worse than minus 50. That was, again, the worst third. And then after those were removed, what was left was basically two-thirds of the heifers being close to average. Maybe just a tick below average, but pretty close to average. So you can see what we're doing there now. You can also see that in that group, there were some heifers that had pretty high marbling potential. And here's an example, a red baldy. I don't know what her genetic background was exactly, but she had an MVP of plus 30, almost plus 31 for marbling. So that would be something to build on if you're interested in grid premiums and building cattle that have some carcass value. So there's one of the heifers that made the keeper pen. Here's the two sires, and they are very elite sires. They would be in the top 6% for calving ease in the Angus breed, so they could certainly be used on heifers. And they are also in the top 1% for dollar B, which means they have a lot of growth in carcass, and they have a lot of feeding and grid potential. So the results, though, of the calf crop, now again, remember what we did. This was one generation. Lopped off the bottom third in an average set of heifers or in a pretty generic set of heifers, and then bred the remaining heifers to some very high-end Angus bulls. The average progeny MVP score and Zoetis's technology there was a plus 53. Wouldn't you like to have a pair of boots like that? You see those boots? We all need a pair of boots like that. So here's the whole graphic together. We started out over here on the left-hand side with a minus 21 on 104 heifers. We culled out the worst offenders. That's the big X you see. Those were way below average, way below average in terms of marbling potential. We then had a group of heifers that were closer to average. And finally, the progeny. And look where those progeny are. Look where they are. They're way, way above average. And this was done in one generation, again, with just two steps of technology. I believe, and we'll see when these cattle are harvested, it'll be in the second quarter of this coming year, I believe these cattle will earn somewhere between a $60 and a $90 per head premium on the grid. That's a pretty sizable premium in one generation, and basically knowing the genetics are going to grow well in the feed yard too and feed efficiently, and their cost of gain is going to be very acceptable. So that's all done in one generation with the technologies that we've discussed. So we'll know the final results here in about 6 months or so. I do want to show you one other piece of that study as we wrap this up. Now, what if some of the heifers had been kept? I kind of wish in some ways we had kept some of these heifers. There were 19 replacement heifers, or 19 heifers, and here are the gene max scores on all 19 head. Of course, gene max is in more of an Angus-based DNA test, and it looks at two traits, growth and marbling, and it's a 1 to 99 score, okay? 99 obviously being better than a number that's lower. So what you see here is you look at these 19 head of heifers. This was all the heifers that were produced now. It's 100% of them. Is there was a little bit of a tail end there, but there wasn't much. And if I wanted to go into this group and select 10 or 12 or 14 heifers that I like the best, well, it'd be pretty easy to do, I think, because what I would do is I'd eliminate the bottom two or three, and then I'd have a pretty good pool of heifers with a high genetic potential for growth and marbling left to pick the ones that I like phenotypically and so forth. And so, again, all this done in one generation, starting out with a pretty average set of heifers, and now we've got, if we were going to keep some of those heifers, we've really got something to build on for the next generation. Let's wrap this up, and the last thing that I want to say in summary here is kind of back to where we started, and that is, in this industry today, what I see is opportunity ahead. I see opportunity in that we have more young people in this audience than probably we would have at the Range Cow Symposium, you know, 10 years ago or whenever. That's encouraging to me, because we need to get that started in our business. We've got to make the most of that opportunity. We've got to make the most as an industry of better profitable times in the cow-calf side of our business. We've got to rebuild the cow herd. We've got better demand for our product, but we've got to answer that with producing more supply. That's not going to happen the next few years, but we need to do that longer term. We need to also, and I want to remind you all, to think about the entire beef supply chain. It's easy for all of us to get our heads down and work. If I'm in the cattle feeding business, that's all I think about. Or you on the ranch, that's all you think about. But we do need to think about the entire beef supply chain. And I guarantee you this, we will all be more prosperous if we work together and we keep the big picture in mind. And then again, think about the future of this business and help a young person get started. That's really going to help us for the next generation. That's all I had. Thank you for your attention this afternoon. Thank you very much.